Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series, where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. So this month, I am delighted to be joined by our Associate Director of Nursing. She's a senior midwife, a mum, and the recipient of the British Empire Medal for her contribution to the COVID-19 vaccination programme across Bradford District and Craven. Rekaya Mia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Delighted to join you.
So I'm really excited. I know quite a bit about you already, Rekaya, so I'm really looking forward to exploring the conversation with you so that other people, our listeners, can understand a bit about you and your journey and your contributions. And you've achieved a lot already in your career, but I believe it didn't almost happen because you were put off nursing by a careers advisor who told you that it was perhaps going to be too academic for you. Is that right?
Absolutely. That conversation still sits with me and I guess motivates me. And I remember sitting there, Mel, and listening to what you could contribute and what you make nursing. I've always been a people person. I love being able to support and care where I can. And I absolutely could see listening to a nursing career resonate with who I am and what I am. So yes, it felt to be the right choice at that time. But it was a surprise to hear that I might not be able to achieve that.
Well, achieve it you did in spades, and it's been a fantastically successful career to date. But I guess it has changed quite significantly since the time that you started your training. What year did you start your training?
March 1991. It's changed tremendously. We know that nursing's impact and certainly midwifery nowadays is hugely appealing because of the breadth and depth that it brings to people's lives and the routes that you can go into senior leadership roles or simply just caring for others is that reward. So it's changed a lot from my start into this career.
I bet you a little bit because I started my nurse training in 1987. So I sort of just qualified and was probably a junior staff nurse around the time you started. And coincidentally, just yesterday, I attended the funeral of someone I look back on as being really pivotal in shaping me in those very early years in the profession, a senior sister who was a real force to be reckoned with, a massively huge taskmaster with incredibly high standards. And we parted company in 1992, actually, and yet have remained in touch ever since. And when I talk to people joining the profession, I always kind of say you will find along the way the role models, for good or bad, that you will always remember. Who have been the kind of positive role models for you throughout your career?
The one person that, a bit like the careers advisor, that always comes back positively, and I was just reminiscing just a few minutes ago with some colleagues I hadn't seen in a long time, and it was a nursing officer that I was in awe of, and her name, and I wish I could be in touch with her to tell her, was Val Fawcett at Airedale, and she was my inspiration. She was my guide and go-to. But initially, we were frightened because she had that austerity about her. But when I qualified, and I remember sitting with a cup of tea, deciding to take a career break away for a year, and I remember talking to Sister Fawcett, and she said, "Stop calling me Sister Fawcett, I'm Val now, because you've qualified, you're not in school anymore." And we laughed, and she guided me and said, "This is a journey that you need to do." That's the person that nurtured me. She kept me on the straight and narrow and gave me advice about my career. It was my first ICU job over five other applicants that needed to have that qualification and experience. She had faith in me, confidence in me, and I will always go back to the values she stood by. She was firm, she was fair, and she told you what you needed to know, not what you would like to know. So that is my role model. And you know what, Mel, when I look back, there's been a lot of Vals in my life like her. And as a BAME woman, it comes back to your heritage and things. I've always had non-BAME leaders that supported me, encouraged me, shaped me, inspired. Because sometimes someone that hasn't walked your shoes but has sat with you and listened to you is what connects us. So they're my role models, and there are role models as I'm going through my journey, very similar, that tell me what I need to be doing. Because we all need support and we need doors to open.
A book I read quite some time ago now, it was a compilation of leadership stories, and it was called Placing Ladders. And that phrase has always stuck with me in terms of one of the responsibilities of a leader is to do that, isn't it? It's to kind of to give other people the opportunity to rise to great heights and to fulfill their ambition and their potential. Can you think of others when you kind of look back now, because you are that person, you are that role model, that you have helped and how you've tried to do that?
I might embarrass certain leaders, but my most recent ladder, if you like, for want of a better phrase, in the 4 or 5 years I've known, has been our chief nurse. I've got to say this. I've said it before, but some of the deep conversations about leadership journey has been our very own chief nurse, Karen Dauber. And each time you meet a new leader, as I have done, you take some of those values away, those inspirations to shape others. When we talk to one another, it doesn't matter whether you're a senior leader, and I've spoken to you often, is when you talk about what connects us and what our aspirations are collectively, is to deliver fantastic services that are personalised, but also do the other half of our job, which is to create that kind of leadership through opening doors and creating that ladder uplift. But to do that, you need to talk to people. You need to hear what their dreams, ambitions and aspirations are. And Karen has done that. The phrase that she has used often is, what's stopping you from doing that then? So go on, tell me, what's stopping you? And I've started using that a lot a number of years ago. What's stopping you? And then that's where you start to look at how you can support and help someone to find their aspiration and ambition.
So, Rekha, after you qualified as a nurse, you returned to study and joined us here at Bradford as a student midwife. What was it that made you change from being a general nurse to a midwife?
I probably fell in love with midwifery from taking the placement that you do as a general nurse, being with women, bringing life into the world together, working with women and families. And that's been a love affair from probably mid-90s to date. Something seems to keep pulling me back to midwifery. And I think most of us will have that strong pull, whether it's care of elderly or end of life. Something pulls, and midwifery has always pulled me. When I did my placement with Bradford, I hadn't done any of the practical placements, but I remember coming very heavily pregnant with my third child, and I was interviewed, and I'm thinking, it's not the best place to be when you're pregnant. But then I thought, well, I mean, I'm a midwife, why wouldn't it? And that's where I was interviewed shortly after the given the job, and then fell in love with Bradford, and the Bradford glue has kept me for 23 years plus.
I like that term, the Bradford glue. I think I've encountered that already. So 3 years in, not going anywhere. So tell me more then, Rekha, about your current role. I know that you still work really hard to maintain that contact with the sort of love of your life, maternity services, but you've been incredibly busy over the last couple of years doing something very, very different. Can you tell us about that?
I went into a nursing portfolio in 2017 because I wanted to expand my leadership journey and strength. So I went into a matron role, but I retained midwifery because I felt that midwifery to me was where women are. And I also kept the interest and the inspiration, if you like, for want of a better phrase, to support students at the university. And it's being able to think outside of that box and see what I can contribute, my passion, my dedication, my commitment, and truly caring about staff and women and their families, really.
I want to talk now about COVID, because whatever your role in this organisation, all of what we did during that period changed very dramatically, didn't it? And for you in particular, there was a new opportunity that emerged through that in the shape of the vaccination programme that was such a critical part of dealing with and containing the impact of COVID-19. How did you become involved in the vaccination programme?
An opportunity for the vaccine programme came. And I remember reading the job description, and there was some encouragement to look into that role. Was lived experience. So there was a bit about an authentic leader and about supporting communities out there that were distressed and needed that support from someone that probably, I guess, looked like them and maybe in many ways thought like them, because I am of that community, and it was important for me to be able to step into that role and use all those experiences, skills that I have. So it was looking at what I wanted to do, which was to reassure, try and create the partnership with the communities, the multi-agencies. I am a people person. Those skill sets I knew I had. So I could use that to really get underneath the problem of what people were worried about: vaccine safety, efficacy, and access. Because that started taking vaccines into places that we wouldn't have otherwise thought of. You know, it's where an individual from a community, a man, a lady, a young person might feel comfortable, might be in mosques, might be in a women's group setting, music festivals. We were on stage with our chief nurse, really being like rock stars. We were at Freshers dressed as vaccine fairies. We were things to everyone because we needed to demystify and use the fun element, the things that connects us at a time when everything was serious. And, you know, there were loss of life at the same time, we mustn't forget. So it was really important that those conversations were happening, but at the same time, at people's levels that they could understand. We went into schools at the time when we had to deliver vaccines to very young people and children. So we also created the family clinics at our St. Luke site, which is very appealing because we had a paediatric department. It offered the lack of clinical space that probably puts people off. So it was about working with our partners, our communities, to understand and provide services that was individualised, person-centred. Because coming in and saying, I know you need to have the vaccine, just simply wasn't going to work for people.
It was really hard to get people to come forward, but we did. And you and the team did an amazing job of getting huge numbers of people vaccinated. In terms of the booster, and there have been two of those, numbers have really dropped off, haven't they? It's becoming increasingly difficult to engage in the way that we did previously. What's changed, do you think?
Luckily, because of the successes of my colleagues and our leadership in rolling out the vaccine, we've managed to protect people and to stop the transmissibility of this virulent infection. But it becomes a little bit different when you are in the community and you see the urgency missing from media and various other things. We're out of the lockdown. So the question that keeps coming is, well, it's over, isn't it? COVID's gone. Well, actually, it isn't. And it's a hard sell to say we're still seeing very sick people and there's still loss of life, sadly. Winter wellbeing campaign came into being because winter time is here, infection rates are high for COVID and flu. So our communities need to know that winter wellbeing is a package of care. And again, we partnered with our GPs because we are all here to provide that inclusive service through our holistic approach. And we can't do it in a singular way, just one person. So it's that partnership that is here to deliver, I suppose, that booster.
So the message is COVID is still there. We know that. I know that today we have a ward dedicated to the care still, a full ward of COVID patients. So it very definitely is still there, even though the profile nationally, as you say, in the media and in other areas is not as high. And therefore the booster, whenever that is offered, is something really worthwhile taking up.
The analogy we use to have conversations is it's a bit like a mobile phone. Your charge starts to wane over time and you need to keep topping up. So it's those kinds of dialogue that we need to have at different settings. It's a collective responsibility, Mel. That is the message really to everyone.
Okay, when I look back over the COVID period, it was the worst of times, but it showed the best of us. Best of us as a, not just an NHS, but as a community, as Bradford District and Craven partners working together to support and save lives across our community. What do you think we've learned from all that? And how can we apply any of that to our ongoing work?
Bradford has demonstrated its unity, its common purpose. There is no them and us, you know, there is no NHS and the community. The community is our workforce. The community is our service users. So if we need to do something differently, then we need to do it together.
And when you say together, I kind of think it's not just health agencies, is it? It's the voluntary sector. It's the communities themselves. It's our colleagues across social care, the local authority. There was such a fantastic coming together with one purpose throughout that period. And that's the bit that you kind of want to hold on to and to try and keep applying to today's challenges.
Every single one of those groups are volunteers, our community champions, our communities itself were integral. You know, we can't afford for a moment not to be engaged. That is what Bradford is, and that's what we need to be remembering and applying for all our services.
So for all of this work, you were awarded the British Empire Medal. How did it feel to hear that news, to be recognised in that way, and what was it actually like receiving your award?
It was an absolute shock, I suppose, and the greatest honour that, you know, a profession or a person could have. But that award, as I have said before, isn't recognising me. That is a collective award in my eyes and in my heart of a team, of an organisation, of a system, of a district. It's an award for us, for the work that we did together.
So you have had a very successful career so far, but I know that you remain ambitious. What next? What's your next sort of goal?
I'd like to continue on the leadership journey because to me, leadership is about making the greatest contribution, I guess, to care, healthcare. I feel that my time isn't up yet in terms of stopping where I am. I want to continue. I'm still on that journey, still on that road, and see where it takes me.
Thank you for joining me today, Rakeya, and for the fantastic work that you do for us here at the Trust and across the wider community. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Mel.